Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to another episode of the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I am a reporter, writer, editor for ArizonaSports.com and the Empire of the Suns blog. I am joined by Kevin Zimmerman, who holds that same exact title. Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
Same title, different hours of the day.
Pretty much, yeah. You are the, I refer to you, like my friend's parents, as the morning version of me, because that's basically what you are. So, we had some Suns basketball this weekend. They played a back-to-back on the road. They played Memphis. They played Oklahoma City. They played terribly. We're not really going to focus too much on the terrible basketball, or we have to talk about it in some extent, but at the same time, we don't want to be repetitive. This is going to be a long year, it looks like, but we're not going to come back week after week and tell you turnovers, fast break points. We're going to try.
But we are, because we have to.
But we have to a certain extent, but we're also going to try and limit it. So with that point in mind, we're not going to jump to that right away and instead talk about the biggest story out of this weekend, besides their poor play, which in my opinion was the play of DeAndre Ayton on Saturday against Memphis. He was terrific offensively. He had 24 points on 13 shots, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal. I just thought he took over the game in some stretches, and that is something we talked about in the preseason, where as a number one overall pick, you need to see it. You need to see it even in his rookie year, even in his first 20 games, you need to see it at some points, and that was his best performance by a really good margin, in my opinion.
Also, no turnovers for a team that's been the biggest issue, and I think when you watch him, everything that's impressive about him is when he's, like, you can see when he's focused. And that game, he was very focused. At some point, the Suns just realized, hey, we have to go to him because Booker's out. And I think once it became clear to him that that's what was happening, then he was just like locked in. And he was not hesitating on his jumpers. He knew, all right, I'm just going to take one dribble, go over right hook because I have position. That bounce pass back door for Josh Jackson was that game, right?
Twas, yes.
Yeah, out of the high post. Like, he was just very decisive. And that's something that the Suns as a whole can't say they are. And then you come back and you see him struggle the next game. But I think it just highlights, like, that's what everyone saw out of this is why this guy's number one. And that's against a guy, Marc Gasol's on the older side of things.
He is exiting his prime with grace and style.
But when you see DeAndre do that against like Marc Gasol and DeAndre Jordan, even when you consider he'll flip back the other way and struggle to some degree against a guy like Nerlens Noel the next night, it's promising. You're going against NBA vets who know what's going on and they don't really have answers. And I think, especially when you look ahead to like teams like the Spurs, who have, I think I looked it up or just saw it in passing, bad defensive team, like older, they don't have a lot of athletes. Like, maybe that's where you say DeAndre Ayton should dominate this game.
So I loved the Memphis game because we kind of got, sometimes when guys come out of college, we have nice little ticks for them and little things that they do already. But with Ayton, it was pretty much impossible to get any of that, really, in terms of just very little minute things, because he was playing out of position and he was dealing with double teams all the freaking time. So to see him in these little elements, and to see him, to me, in that game, there was a move he had on Jaren Jackson Jr. where, in his first step, his right foot was his pivot foot. He took his left and pretty much swung it forward to body into Jaren Jackson's chest and create just a little bit more room. First dribble, second dribble, jump hook, he hit that. That was at the 420 mark of the second quarter, and that's where I felt like he really got in a groove, and that's where he started to take over the game. A couple possessions later, he faces up on Marc Gasol, fakes a jab step left, and people are going to pick up on that he's not really going to attack you off the dribble, but Marc Gasol doesn't know that for now. So Marc Gasol starts doing the quick feet thing for a second, getting ready to move his feet if he has to. He's dead. Ayton hits the jump shot over him, and that jump shot was like on a line, and that's actually when it looks the best in my opinion, and what it looked like a lot at Arizona, and when he's in rhythm, I think. So to me, I saw him just really get to the point where he was locked in and in the zone for the first time this season. And there was the take he had at the end of the game. They're down by 20. It doesn't really matter. And it was on Ivan Rabb. But he had the ball at the elbow, faced up, two dribbles, spin move, jump hook from about 10 feet. And just unguardable if he can hit those types of shots and create. The biggest thing for him, and it's fun because we're not used to analyzing post guys like this. We don't often talk about post position and how much it matters. But pretty much the key for him in his career right now, I think, for him to be a good scorer is going to be when he catches the ball from 14 feet out or further, how does he get that extra 4 to 6 feet of space before he gets to that hook that's unguardable or the jumper or gets even further to the basket and finishes around the rim? And that type of move that he had on Rab, where he went from 18 feet to 10 feet just because of a nice little spin move, that's really going to be the key for him and how often he can do that. Because we saw those possessions against Damian Jones, for example, where he tried to back him down twice and was like, oh, no, no. He had some against Nerlens as well, where he was struggling to create space, and that's going to be the key for him going forward. See, we're being negative already, but yeah. I thought he was awesome, and his production has just been tremendous to start the season. It's just been really, really good. Is there anything else you really saw from him this weekend?
I mean, I know we're trying to keep it positive, but you see where there's room to grow at the foul line, where he's not getting there. And a lot of that is, like, he has gotten better just in this small series of games to start the year of getting post position early in the shot clock and just, like, bodying guys out. And it's on the other Suns to get him the ball, which obviously there are issues just bringing the ball up and getting the offense rolling instead of breaking off and being like, yo, your big guy's standing 2 feet under the rim with a helpless dude stuffed, like standing out of bounds because he got position. That's a place where he can get to the foul line easily without talking about how advanced his, you know, moves on the inside and getting on the block halfway through the shot clock, that kind of thing. But yeah, he is what we thought he was, and we saw all the really good things this weekend. It's just what's around him is tough right now.
Yeah, speaking of he is who we thought he was, I'm going to take this in two different directions. First, he was not who we thought he was in terms of a passer, because I think we saw him as a kickout guy at Arizona, because that's all we could really see him as a passer, was identifying double teams quickly and kicking out. But we never really got to see him because, oh yeah, he's playing power forward with Dusan Ristić, so we can't really see his passing vision in other areas that much. He's a legitimate passer. I tweeted a couple things here and there in the first three games that it was like he had the assist numbers, but most of them were coming off dribble handoffs. The past two games, especially that Grizzlies game, that was all creative stuff. He had that drop-off bounce pass to Isaiah Cannon, who was cutting back door on the baseline. There's just little plays here and there. You mentioned the Josh Jackson pass. He is going to be a guy to me that looks like a guy who could average at least 2 to 3 assists a game, and that might sound a little low, but as a center, centers just don't really do that often unless they have a little bit of playmaking in their system, and I'm saying just this year. So maybe is he a guy in the future who can average 4 to 5 assists under Igor Kokoshkov in his system? I realistically think that he is a guy who could one day maybe average like 5 assists a game. He's at 3.8 right now through 6 games.
I mean, back to that turnover issue with the team, he's not making that. He's not making complicated passes. He's just very good at, like, even if he's in the post, all right, he's patient, he doesn't rush, he sees the court. If he's getting doubled, he'll get rid of it. Like, it's simple stuff like that. And even on dribble handoffs, he's not handing the ball off when guys are busting up that play. He's just very, I guess you would just call it awareness, or he has a good feel for the game, those buzzwords. But yeah, that stuff's promising. And the bounce pass actually looked like a cool pass. So maybe there's even more untapped there, but obviously we'll be satisfied and everything will be fine if he's just like just aware of what's going on and not getting tunnel vision, which he has not been. So that's good.
So, looking at assist to turnover ratio, just to go off your point again, 3.29. That's terrific. That is the best mark on the team by a pretty substantial margin. It's not very close. There are actually a couple of guys, Elie Okobo with a 2.0, but the thing to notice about this is that his usage rate is 20.0%. I just looked this up among players in the league who are averaging at least a 20% usage. He is top 10 in assist to turnover ratio right now.
As a big. Who else is up there?
So, atop the list, J.J. Braille with a 10.25 assist to turnover ratio. That's just classic.
Long live J.J. Braille.
J.J. Braille with a 3.8 turnover ratio, which is just incredible. He is, I'm going through this whole list right now, he is the first big on the list. The second big on the list is Anthony Davis at 3.17. Ben Simmons is at 2.85. Willie Cauley-Stein is at 2.7. Nikola Jokic is at 2.38. So we're talking about those are
the best passing
terrific
bigs.
Numbers, but did creep up a little bit against a very fast and long and designed to be a great defensive team, Oklahoma City Thunder, where he had three. There were just a couple where he went for a kick out, and I think Abrines got his hands up, and they looked like they were ready. They were ready for that, and it's going to be adjusting going forward, but his production right now is crazy. I tweeted out the stat. He's averaging 17, 10, and 4 right now on a 66.7 true shooting percentage. The last rookie to average 15, 10, and 2, so I've put the stats down a little bit maybe to what they might wind up being. To have a true shooting percentage that high was David Robinson. He was at 59.7. Even if Ayton goes way down and has a true shooting percentage of like 56, 58, something like that, that's only been done 8 times in league history by a rookie.
Yeah.
So in terms of efficiency and production, he's certainly there. And you can make your defensive jabs all you want. You can make your he doesn't box out, how does he help your team better jokes. If he's posting an efficient 15 and 10 and 2 or 3 as a rookie, that's a really great start to his career. And looks like where he's headed for this rookie. And this is another reason why me and you both picked him for rookie of the year, I think, is because we just saw the chance for him to really have a great statistical season.
Yeah.
And that really does matter because as we translate into Ryan Anderson, Jamal Crawford, Tyson Chandler's of the Suns are not that watchable of a team. And not many people are going to be tuning in because they're getting blown out. This is now 5 games in a row. They have not been competitive.
Good teams,
really,
bad teams. Yep.
Anyway, the Grizzlies, maybe they're a 40-win team. Who knows? The Thunder, who knows what they're at right now with the way they've started the year. Yes, they are playing against good teams in some aspects. They haven't really played a quote-unquote bad team except the Mavericks, and they beat the Mavericks. So I guess that can be your saving grace argument. But to be expected without Devin Booker, they're not going to win either of these games. But at the same time, same stuff we've been talking about, defensive intensity, transition defense, dumb turnovers. This is stuff that shouldn't be there for any NBA roster, no matter how many guys are out. And it is extremely problematic to their long-term success for the rest of the season.
So I think I saw on the broadcast last night that they're leading the league in assist rate in terms of just percentage of made field goals that are assists. That's bad. And most teams, you would say, well, that means they're sharing the ball. They have to share the ball. That's the only way they can score. That's just reflective of the mismatch of talent. They have a lot of guys who you can classify as role players. Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson have been really up and down. Ariza's been pretty bad since that opener. And it's not necessarily his fault. It's just that if you're not knocking down threes, if you're Trevor Ariza, then what? And you're going to play fine defense. But it's just from the pure standpoint of production, what are you going to give? And that's the problem with those veterans, Tyson Chandler, Jamal Crawford. They're going to do the right things. They're going to play smart basketball to some degree. But like Jamal Crawford can't go one-on-one anymore. That's his forte. He's 38 years old, but he needs some help. He needs some distractions. If everyone knows what's going to happen when he brings the ball up, it's easy to stop, and he's not going to be as good.
I don't think that's necessarily a defense of Jamal Crawford's play either, but you're just saying extenuating circumstances have to be taken into consideration. The lineups that the four top lineups he has been playing with so far, one of them is Chandler, Warren, Bridges, and Okobo. So I guess Okobo after Sunday's game, we'll talk about in a bit how he played. But
are these top as in minutes played together?
Yes. There's just not really a lot there for him offensively, and he has to do a lot, and there's not much in terms of options. The second highest option is Chandler Warren, Booker Jackson, a lot more there, obviously. But the next one, Chandler Warren, Jackson, and Mikhail. Ariza, Anderson, Booker Ayton is the next one. Chandler, Ariza, Warren, and Jackson. So I think there are some mixes in there where he can work well. But having him come off in this second unit just is not it to me. And more so, I just seeing the role that he is trying to play. I don't think he's actually going out there, my interpretation of his play at least, not really focusing on it too much and going back and watching everything. I think he's actually been trying to play within the system a lot. He's been trying to run pick and roll with Tyson Chandler to keep the ball moving, and he's kept the ball moving in other circumstances. And then when the offense breaks down, he has to be Jamal Crawford. He's done Jamal Crawford things, and he's actually done it pretty well. He's shooting the ball at a decent rate at this point. But there's just... it doesn't make sense for him to play given what they need. They need another point guard out there. He is not that point guard. And when someone like Elia Kobo plays well, I think Elia Kobo, when Devin Booker comes back, hopefully that's on Wednesday, you look at the trickle-down effect of that. They need one less ball handler in the lineup now. Kobo and Crawford were both playing. Now one of them probably has to stop playing. It should be Crawford, but before I kick it back to you, they signed Jamal Crawford for a reason.
Yeah.
They signed him to play this role. I completely disagree with it as a move itself. I saw the logic in it, but at the same time, I just completely disagreed with it and thought it was a dumb move because you're blocking playing time for younger guys. And if you're blocking playing time for Elia Kobo, especially with the way the team looks right now, it doesn't look like you're going to be the team you thought you were already. So I don't think there's any point in having this guy out there for the hopes of winning 33, 34 games or whatever it is.
I'm actually I obviously was a proponent of it because I thought, for some reason, I thought that he would be able to fix things when things broke down. But he's actually playing well, like you just said, within the system, and he's not, being able to be himself almost. And maybe it's just a feel thing and it's a timing thing. And again, this offense, Jazz people told us this offense would take time because you can tell lots of it is just the Suns overthinking and trying to unnaturally run the offense because it's just new to them. And maybe that's what he's doing. But yeah, I thought he would be helpful for when those plays broke down and he would just score. But he's not quite doing that yet, and that's probably like him actually being a team player and trying to make it work. So yeah, I agree with you about Okobo now to some degree. Like, we're already at the point where we say let the kids play. Like, if Kanan's out, we don't really know what his ankle status is, do we? Unless something came out last night. I was half paying attention with the Cardinals game going on, but basically, right now, all this comes down to rotations and fits, and it's not like there's an easy answer. Do you play TJ Warren over Ryan Anderson? What does that help? That takes away shooting. Ryan Anderson has been pretty awful in all regards.
No, TJ Warren's a three-point shooter now.
That's true.
I'm half kidding. Ryan Anderson's sole role on this team is to space the floor for DeAndre Ayton.
Ryan Anderson's on-off stuff that I looked up is among the best on this team, and there are people like calling for his head already, and it's like that's one of those weird things where advanced stats, like stats, where we have to watch more because really the blowing out has been all second quarter when Ryan Anderson leaves. So that's probably why that number is skewed that way. But, like, has he been that bad? I don't know.
I think he has. He's dribbling the ball too much. He's 3 feet behind the three-point line at all times for some reason. I guess that's to space the floor or something. But he's here to shoot threes, and he's shooting 23% on 3.7 attempts a game. So I think he's playing bad by default in that manner. And then he's just dribbling the ball too much. I understand that he wants to take the ball off the dribble every now and then, but when DeAndre Ayton has post position on your side of the floor and the floor is spaced out, I'm guessing it's designed that way so DeAndre Ayton can get the ball, he's driving at Ayton's post position and trying, I don't know what he's trying to score,
jumpers,
I think. And they're
mostly
setback jumpers because he's slow now, and he wasn't that fast to begin with in the first place. When I wrote the piece on him from Flagstaff, I showed the Dirk one-legged step back on those drives because I was like, this dude has this in his locker. He can score a little bit. He shouldn't be trying for that shot four times a game or whatever he's doing right now. He's taking 6.8 shots per game. 3.7 of them are three. So, I mean, that's right around where you want it. But it's because a lot of those drives he's having to kick out or just try a pass that isn't there. And it's a lot of just messy play from him so far. And then, of course, like defensively, he's not going to help there at all. So, I mean, the bottom line with him is he has to hit his shots. If he's going to be shooting under 30% from 3, 10, 15 games in, I think you have no choice but to make changes. I don't say he should hit the bench necessarily, but I don't see how he can play over 22, 23, 24 minutes a game. Just give him the start of the first and second half, and that's it. I think that's all it should be if he's not hitting shots. And maybe if his shots go down but he's continuing to play like this, I think you can switch it up. But looking at the Thunder game, for example, sure, he had 15 points and he was getting to the foul line or whatever, but 31 minutes, I guess that's Igor dissecting effort and level of play out there in a blowout. But at the same time, 31 minutes, really? I don't think he should be playing over 30 minutes on any night. And I think that's where some of the frustration comes to a much greater extent. He is not in the same camp as Trevor Ariza. It's the same thing. Trevor Ariza is shooting 31% from three on 5.8 attempts per game.
Yeah.
A lot of guys are shooting a lot of threes right now, but he's shooting 33% from the floor as a whole, and that is in an offensive role where he's trying to do a lot more, which is bringing up more turnovers. He's averaging 2 turnovers a game, also 3.7 assists, but he's shooting 33% from the floor, and defensively, he's not a great defensive perimeter guy anymore. I would say he's still good, but that doesn't matter on this team right now. It just doesn't. I can't state it any greater than you need all five guys to understand the basic defensive concepts of NBA defense in order for him to provide you plus value as a defender. Because if he can at least, that's step one, let alone step 64 of becoming a great NBA defense. So if you can get past step one, that's where Trevor Ariza can start helping you a little bit more on that end. But no one can help that on that end right now until those guys start doing the things better.
All this comes to everything that we talk about, whether it's turnovers or plus minus, everything comes down to this simple fact that they don't have a good roster.
Yeah.
You don't have three, let alone even two guys to put around, say, Trevor Ariza for the point you're making. You don't have two or three defenders to make up for Ryan Anderson's lack of defense. And look, the Suns came in, and the best thing they could say about this team was we have a lot of wings, and those wings are not playing well. TJ Warren, reality's kind of hit. He had a bad game. That's fine. Especially when Devin Booker's not around, he's going to have bad games because teams know now how to stop him if he's the primary option. Josh Jackson might arguably be the worst offensive player in the league. That's not an exaggeration, I don't think. I saw a chart where he was sitting there by himself. I saw two charts today on NBA Math Twitter. He hasn't figured it out. So when you put those two things in, Mikal Bridges is still figuring it out and has probably been the most positive.
He's been the most consistent of the four outside of TJ, because TJ had a couple of such great offensive games that he probably outranks him, but he's been better than Trevor and Josh for sure.
Yeah.
That's not like being showing favoritism to a top 10 pick that you're excited about. He's just played better. We wrote the season preview stuff. One of mine, my main thing was, here are the five things the Suns need to go well in order for them to be a competitive team and win 30, 35 games, whatever. My number one point was the versatility of the wings and how much does that actually help this team. Josh Jackson's net rating, -13.8. TJ Warren's -14.9. Trevor Ariza's -18.7. That tells me flat out that they are not benefiting from it, because they're getting smoked whenever those guys are on the court. Mikal Bridges is actually a positive 13.2. It's really small sample size. His minutes have been all over the place, so I'm not overreacting to that too much. But when you look at someone like DeAndre Ayton with a -4.4, Devin Booker with a -6.7, Elie Okobo -7.5, that's right around where the team is right now at the moment. But you look at the max of this, and that's where Jackson, Warren, and Ariza are as the guys who have the biggest roles in the team, the team is playing the worst when they're on the court right now. There's no other way to really describe it. We talked about how misleading these numbers can be. You talk about when the second quarter comes in, that's when it's really tailing off. That's when those guys are playing.
Yeah.
and that's the problem.
It really has been. Second quarter is what, the last four games? Yeah. Five games?
Grizzlies game, they actually held the lead down a little bit. But that was because Memphis still scored 42 points in the second quarter.
Yeah.
I was saying, don't be down by 20 here and we're in a good spot because you've turned the ball over so much. And they were down 15 or 14. And I was like, all right, yeah, that's okay. For how horrible this has been, that's actually not too bad. It could have been much, much worse. The stat that I found last night while looking through these games, the Suns have had one 30-point quarter in the last two games.
Yeah.
One. They need a point guard. This is, again, comes back to what we talked about at the opening of the show, which is stuff we can't keep talking about over and over again. But to that point on the wings, they need a functional point guard out there. And maybe it's Eli Okobo, who we'll talk about in a bit. But before we move away from just rotations as a whole, I just don't think Tyson Chandler has it anymore, man. He does not benefit this team in any way when he's on the court. I think people were sort of on it last year and even 2 years ago to a certain extent with the way he was moving, but I think it's to an extreme this year. It just looks like he's lost another step on top of it. Yes, he's a lob threat, I guess, and a dive threat, but defensively there's nothing there. And when you look around this team and see the guys in terms of effort and just trying to be in the right spot defensively, a lot of the time he's been one of the worst guys on the team at it, in my opinion.
It's moving.
That's perfect. Yeah.
Like you just saw it last night. I think, was it last night? He took a lob from Crawford, I think, and it was a nice play, set up just fine. Wasn't a bad pass, and he just clanked it against, couldn't get it over the rim, and it was just like, it's not fun to watch because it's like he thought he could dunk that basketball into that basketball hoop that's 10 feet tall, and he didn't have it by a few inches. And that's just kind of encapsulates where he's at athletically right now, which, yeah.
So you can say Ryan Anderson shouldn't start anymore. Trevor Ariza shouldn't start anymore. I think that's overreacting, and Kokoschkov cannot bail on his veterans that quickly. With that being said, you can bail on Tyson Chandler right now with the way he's looking. And look, if you think Tyson Chandler is going to pout and just be negative, he's an expiring contract. Just let him go.
Yeah.
He can go. That's fine. We'll pay the money. We're not going to get anything out of your play, clearly. And this is no shots at Tyson. I've enjoyed his time here, but it's just time to move on. You have a young center in Rashawn Holmes you acquired for a reason, or at least Ryan McDonough acquired for a reason. And his reason was to come in here and play on nights when Tyson Chandler couldn't. We thought Tyson maybe wouldn't play back-to-backs. He still played against OKC, I believe. Yeah, he played 12 minutes. So there's just a clear replacement there in Rashawn Holmes, who I don't think you can argue is much worse than Tyson Chandler at the moment, and probably is better than Tyson Chandler at the moment. At least he can move, Kevin. At least he can move.
He can do the moves.
He can do the moves, and I think that's kind of where you can look at it in this game. I think Okobo over Crawford, Holmes over Chandler, six games in, seems pretty clear. With that being said, both of those guys are still here for a reason, and we'll see how long it takes for those moves to come into place. But Tyson is just more, I think Tyson far more than Crawford is just, he is clearly hurting them. He's clearly a negative out there, whereas Crawford, you can see it here and there, but Tyson's very evident.
We can close out on positive. Okobo's night last night was promising. When you talk about this point guard narrative, and it again, it's bad that it happened because Isaiah Cannon got hurt, but he was also not really, he kind of is in that same Ariza Anderson mold where it was like defense, the effort was there. Everything else was kind of a wild card, really.
With Kanan?
Yes.
Kanan just can't make pick and roll reads. Too many times, yeah, the weak side guy's open and he's just not finding it. And that's exactly how this starting unit is designed to go. Shooters, Ayton. If the gravity of Ayton gets him, shooters.
Yeah.
Just wasn't finding the shooters enough, and it was happening a lot. And I think
not hitting enough shots. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a lot of empty play, yeah, I guess is what you would call it. Okobo's night was not empty. Now, he got a lot of points in garbage time when the Thunder had kind of shut it down and the Suns went on a run, made it look respectable. But you have 7 assists. That's the most promising part. You have 3-point shots that go in, another promising part. His defense, I think, is not great overall. He's been cooked by like Shelvin Mack and stuff like that. But
he moves well, but he doesn't know how to move on defense, if that makes sense. His feet are actually pretty quick, but in terms of just watch his body positioning when you watch him defend, watch how much he gives up space. He'll actually move his feet with guys, but still give them the space. Maybe he's scared of picking up fouls or whatever. He had 5 last night, so clearly he wasn't. But to move his feet, I think he'll get there. I actually think he has some promise as a defender. But with that being said, some guys just don't understand defense. You can actually have guys in this league. People say it's all about effort. It's actually not. There are guys who try hard, like Brandon Knight did a couple years ago, who are just terrible anyway because they just don't get it. And hopefully Okobo's not that, but I'm saying there actually is physical promise with him there.
Yeah.
But I think Kanan will continue to start because of defense. We saw there was a situation last night where Josh Jackson was guarding Dennis Schroeder and Russell Westbrook at times, and that's a point where you can go, okay, Ellie can start that night, or he can get a lot of minutes that night. Empty sats in the fourth quarter a little bit, just a little bit, but you just shrugged, and I agree with that shrug. It's still something, and it's still him showing aggression.
You need... Empty stuff from rookies is good.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so
that's a good point.
When I think after the game, Igor said like he came out confidently in that second half when he knew he was going to get more playing time, and you just watch him, and this is where I'll bring it up. This is where I said I loved De'Aaron Fox last year, because you just saw him command the tempo on the offensive end. And Ellie, his English isn't terrible, but you never know if that like hurts your confidence as a young kid to come into an NBA team and say, go direct a bunch of adult people or people older than you, tell them what to do, run the offense. Like, he was doing that last night in the second half, especially. Again, the tempo thing was really promising. And then to produce yourself, he looked a lot more aggressive than he had in the preseason and all that, where he was looking for a shot, making cuts, making the right reads, and really keeping the ball moving. And so, empty or not, when you have all those things happen for a rookie point guard, that's good.
Dude, yeah, 100%. Gina Mazzell from The Athletic had the story last night from Oklahoma City that had DeAndre Ayton had a quote in there where he said he had never heard Ellie Okobo bark at him to roll hard after a pick until that night. And that's exactly what you were talking about. So language barriers be darned. He's out there still yelling at his big men to roll when they should roll. And I think there's a certain point where if he continues, same with Mikal Bridges, where if this starts to become a theme and he has been the better point guard of the two off the bench, hopefully we get to find this out, of course, and he plays over Jamal Crawford. I don't see how you could not play him after the way he played in OKC, especially with how desperate they are for performances like that. Doesn't matter when it is. But the only type of performances we've seen to that level have been Trevor Ariza on opening night, TJ Warren in a couple of games, DeAndre Ayton in most of his games, Devin Booker in all of his games so far, and that's pretty much it in terms of just a spark plug offensive performance. We haven't really seen it from Josh Jackson. I mean, he was 7-11 on opening night, but for those of you who watched, you saw it was still like him running at full speed. It was just the shots happened to go, and me and you sighed heavily at some of the shots when they were released, and they went in. We just shook our heads, and we're like, okay. That's fine. Trevor Ariza really hasn't had much of an impact at all after that opening night. Ryan Anderson, same thing. So you just look around, you need those guys eventually.
Yeah.
And if Mikal Bridges and Ellie Okobo keep playing better than their counterparts, they are going to keep getting more and more playing time. Does that lead to them starting by the end of the year? I'm not sure. I think Ellie is a bit easier to do because Isaiah Kanan's not that important to your picture this year, I would say.
No.
But benching Mikal or benching Trevor Ariza for Mikal, that's maybe a bridge too far. I think the obvious move is Anderson sits, Ariza moves to the four, and Mikal inserts into the starting lineup, and TJ still comes off the bench. But we're a little ways away from that, but it's something worth bringing up because this team really sucks and they need to change stuff.
That would also like anger TJ probably.
Man, I just hope he's embracing the six-man thing, but that's a hard thing to do. Especially when you're, again, suck. Team sucks.
If Igor does that, props to him, but I could see that going poorly in that regard. But
yeah, well, I mean, when you're averaging 15 a game, shooting 51%, and there's a starting lineup change, and you're not that guy, it probably will piss you off. Yeah, you make a good point, by the way. TJ averaging 1.2 assists per game. We're not quite there. Dang it. He's been around the 1.2, 1.3 mark. Just get that to 1.8, TJ, this year. That's all I'm asking for. Just a little bump.
I think this is summed up well by saying when we came into the draft process, we were like, DeAndre Ayton's going to get a lot of the stats and his defense is going to be bad. And we're not necessarily saying we're wrong about that at this point, but we're saying, hey, points and rebounds and assists are good. Please, some other people do those things.
Please, some other people do those things as well. By the way, any thoughts you've had across the league from the rookies play across the league, since it's, I think it's a somewhat relevant NBA-wide discussion with our audience before we go, because we talk so much about these guys leading up to it, just kind of checking in on them across the league. I know for me, I think DeAndre has been the most impressive rookie I've seen. I will say, except for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, because I haven't seen much of him, and when I have, I've been very impressed, and he's been playing really well.
I don't say I turn on the Clippers.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though I should, probably, Bobby and Toby.
Trey's had his good and bad games, yeah, bow and toe for life. Luka's had really good first quarters, just needs to work on the other three. He's getting there. Come on, buddy. But he's still playing really well. I mean, you look at this class already, man. Trey's averaging 20-7 right now. Luka's averaging 19-6-4. DeAndre's averaging 18-10-4. Even Marvin Bagley's averaging 14-7 off the bench in only 24 minutes
a game. I'm pleased that he's doing that, because I was very worried about him.
We were all extremely worried after like the summer league and preseason, yeah. But it's clearly going to be a thing for him if he just keeps the effort there and just keeps that second and third jump alive. He's going to just be such a threat down there by default.
Suns Spurs Wednesday. That's Halloween, right?
That is Halloween, yes. You will be there. I will not be.
I realize that I'm like very lazy on Halloween, so I'm usually not going to dress up. And then I was like, wait, I could easily do Jonah Hill wearing Suns jersey Halloween. But then I realized I was working the game, which would be super unprofessional to go as Jonah Hill wearing a Suns jersey to the Suns game to work.
Oh, that's such a good idea. Yeah, I'm on the shelf for a couple of days, so you'll be covering in person. I'll be covering from the couch. And then it is the good news. The schedule turns around, because the best team in the NBA right now, the Toronto Raptors, is coming into town on Friday. We didn't really talk about the schedule when it released that much, because bad team, who cares? But folks who were really focusing on it, like Evan and Brendan on Locked On Suns, for example, they were talking about, they had their own podcast about how brutal it was and how tough this opening stretch is. And
well,
now I'm starting to realize that
when you're the Suns, every team's better than you.
Yeah, but then it's the Celtics coming up later, and every team in the West is good except the Suns, I guess. So that's also a problem.
Follow us on Twitter at Empire of the Suns, at Kellen Olson, at K Zimmerman AZ. We're at ArizonaSports.com, iTunes. Thanks for listening.